And at this time, it's my great pleasure to introduce to you our speaker for this morning, Richard.
How y'all doing? Is this too loud? All right, I get a little animated every now and then. Yeah, somebody told me if I tied my hands, I couldn't talk. My name's Richard. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is a pretty neat little bunch out in the middle of that Coachella Valley, La Quinta, called the No Rules Group. I got clean and sober August 13th, 1999. Little history about me. I was considered an Army brat. My dad was a 22-year Army man. Then he worked for a place called the PX. 9 public schools before I hit the 8th grade. So I was pretty cool with it. I got a sister a year older than me. I don't think she ever got over it. But I was all right with that. I like meeting new people, going to new places. I'm like a lot of you guys out there. I grew up in a different time. Mama said first words I put together out of my mouth was at a party. And you know Army people, they like to party. And it was Dad giving me a sip of beer, and he taught me how to say, "Ah, good beer." Ah, good beer. It wasn't Daddy, it wasn't Mama. Ah, good beer. And later I found out that the reason why little ones like beer is because the taste buds haven't developed yet. Hey, it's true. And it's not the taste, it's the sparkle. That's why you ever see a little kid? Well, nowadays, hell, you go to jail if you get caught giving a kid a sip of beer. Right? Used to, that was, you know. My first time I ever just got hell beat for drunk, I was the last day of my freshman year in high school. Me and my buddies went to a place called the Indian Graveyard. Cherry vodka. Yeah, I still can't drink it to this day. And falling down, puking, hot damn, I'm here, kind of drunk. It was just, man, what have I been missing for 13 years? And it was on. I was a good kid. I was a standout high school athlete. I was supposed to go to college. I was supposed to do all that. Football scholarships, the whole 9 yards. But man, you know what? I was real smart. I was real smart, and I turned it all down because I had things I had to go do. Big part of my story is drugs. You'll hear about that in a minute. My dad moved me and my sister and my mom from Rancho Cordova to California, to Missouri, because he didn't want his kids growing up in bad environments. Here we are in Southeast Missouri. I graduate high school class, 85 kids in it. That was my senior class. And I'm shooting dope a month after graduation. You know, so it doesn't matter where you're at. Mama always told me I was always able to find the best people no matter where I went, you know. I was just that kind of social. Drinking and drugging, it was completely out of control. I've heard people say they had a problem with admitting they're alcoholics. I don't know. I just knew. I knew before I was 20 years old I had a problem. I just knew it. Drinking, dope. I knew I was some kind of alcoholic. I knew I was some kind of addict. I just knew it. And that hell-raising type atmosphere I was in, Hell, I wore it like a badge of honor. And it was on. I was drinking, drugging. I finally met the woman I had kids with. I was 23. Drinking and drugging. She had her isms. And next thing you know, DWIs, naturally. That's not even counting the times I woke up in jail, bloodied. And, you know, I didn't care how bloody I was. It depended on what the other guy looked like. And I had my share. So I was talking to, I got a sponsee, and he's saying he didn't have anybody to make amends to. And I got to thinking, man, one part of my big amends is there's probably some hospital bills I ought to pay for some folks, you know. I'll probably never see them. It was just a rough time. And I tell youngsters now, I've been around a lot of youngsters in my past few years, a lot of youngsters. And used to, you know, we'd go out and do things by midnight that, with the new laws today, we should have been struck out on by Saturday at midnight. And now these youngsters today, with the 9/11, and they got a rough one to hold, because it's just a new world out there and things are different. But the alcoholism and the drug addiction, but the alcoholism is still the same. It works its way into all our lives, creates havoc. I heard this morning, is Randy in here? I don't see him, but he said jumping in recovery is like getting in a station wagon and hitting the brakes. As soon as you hit the brakes, all the shit that's in the car comes forward and slaps you in the back of the head. You know, and it was a good little analogy. I like that. He gets it one more time. And if you were there, you know what I'm talking about. Divorce, California. I used the little joke. I came to California on vacation, left on probation. Well, I didn't come on vacation. I came to California to try to save a marriage that wasn't going to be saved. It was a geographic. I was going to be... I had a lawyer. I went in his office and put some money on his table, on his desk. And he said, put the money back in your pocket. He said, you got to be in court Wednesday morning. Look there, Big John just walked in. Yeah, and you got to be in court Wednesday morning. And he said, what that judge is going to do, he says, he's going to put you in prison because of your bad behavior. Back then, Missouri had a habitual offender clause. And it didn't matter what you did that last time. It's what he's talking about this time. He said, so if you're in court Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock, he said, you're not leaving. So come Tuesday morning, about Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock, I had a wife, which I jerked out of a rehab, 4 kids, a dog, old wreck of a car, and a U-Haul trailer. And we were about 300 miles west of Oklahoma City, head to California. Yeah, I wasn't going to, they weren't going to get me. Not that time they weren't going to get me. In 1989, the divorce finally happened, and I had messed around with amphetamines before, but I never had, I discovered methamphetamine from California. And I know that's part of a lot of people's story, and it's part of mine. And because of the California meth, which was supposed to be some really good meth, and my relationships still going on in Missouri, I had what is, you know, okay, you send me your money and I'll send you the good stuff. And I got hung up in a thing like that, and a high school buddy of mine got busted. And let me tell you, those federal guidelines on the drug cases are horrendous. There's going to be a time in the United States of America's future where our kids are going to read about these federal guidelines on these drug cases, and they're going to say, no, there's no way that the United States government would do that to people. But I'm not here to ride that one. I'm here to talk about what happened to me. Well, My oldest daughter, remember the old TV commercial where the daddy walks in the kid's room and he's mad and he pulls out a bag of dope. He says, where'd you learn how to do this? And the kid looks at him and says, by watching you, Dad. Well, she gets in the mess too. And she's the insanity of it all. I'm running around doing my thing with some bad people. And I'm going right around behind her. I'm literally kicking people's doors down. I'm beating people up, telling people, don't give my daughter dope. Because she was a mess. And you can't do that. I mean, it doesn't work like that. But anyway, she gets tied up with this guy. He's older than me. And he hurts her. He hurt her once, and I gave him a talking to. Well, he hurt her again, and he dang near killed her, and I went and I did what I thought I was supposed to do. I went and I shot him, and naturally he didn't survive. And so there's the other half of my prison sentence. The feds got me on a mandatory minimum 10-year drug case. It's 8 years and some change. And the state got me on a voluntary manslaughter. I missed the first degree murder because of circumstances. And all in all, I started my prison bit in December of 1997, and I got out in February this year, February 28th. And this is the H&I spot. And I appreciate getting it. Thank you, George, for hooking me up on this gig tonight, this morning. And H&I was just really big. So I got to prison, still running amok, still ain't got it yet. I've heard people say, oh, it's easy to stay clean in prison. It's anything in the world you want. Anything in the world you want. And I spent 6 years on an out-of-state chain in Mississippi where there was literally anything you wanted. Anything you wanted. Let your imagination run away. I'm going to drop it at that. Now, but I got clean. I was in the United States Penitentiary out here at Lompoc. I was in the hole for dope-related business. And that's when I had what Bill W. calls his white light. I was in the hole waiting to see the disciplinary hearing officer. I could spend a lot of time on a drunkalog, the car wrecks, the fights, the fines, the craziness, but you've heard all that before. I'm going to talk about what, you know, got me to where I'm at today. I was in the hole at Lompoc. I'm from Missouri. I'm in federal prison in California, and I get put in a hole with this guy from Missouri. He's a biker. It's called hip shot. He got shot with a shotgun, and he had to go in and do this hip thing. Here's him. He walks like this. And his nickname's hip shot. Well, there's a little bit of difference between the feds and the states. In the feds, the white boys were allowed to ride the what I call the crazy train. They were allowed to get the psychotropics. In the state system, white boys ain't supposed to do the psychotropics and walk main lines. Whatever that is, I don't get the insanity of that either, but hip shot, he played them. Boy, he played them. And they'd bring those pills to him, and they got this little giz whiz. What they do, they put the pill, they put it in there, and they, like a garlic smasher almost, and it powders the pills. They put it in a little cup. That way, they think that the guys won't cheek them and save them for later. Yeah, come on, we're dope fiends. And he sits there and he says, Richard, he said, would you like to get high? I said, well, shit, yeah, that's what I did. And he had a cup, a little white paper cup, half full of this crapped up powder, two or three different kind of pills that he had thrown in his mouth, caught in his lip like there, like a dip of tobacco. And when the nurse walks away and the cop, he digs it out and he puts it in his cup. And I ate that. Well, it was psychotropics. And I lost 3 days. I didn't get up to eat. I guess I didn't get up to piss. I don't know what. I didn't get up. And I woke up. And I shared in a meeting not long ago, my white light, I didn't have the white light because there wasn't enough room between the foot of the bed and the concrete wall for anything. So these cells at Lompoc are really little. They're really little. But it hit me. And it just hit me. Rich, what else? What else can, what do you got to lose? I've lost everything. I've lost my freedom. I've lost everything I had in the world. I've lost my family. There's nothing else. And I was what they called a candlelight in a Lutheran church. I walked up there in front of the pastor with the robes on. I lit the candles. I sat up there while he gave his sermon. At the end, I put the candles out and I let him out. I was taught about the book Jesus. My higher power is Jesus Christ. I tell that every time I talk. Well, not every time, but most times. But my higher power is Jesus. And if you want to hear about Jesus, get with me at the end of the meeting. I'd be more than happy to share it. Now, but I got all this book. I got some book knowledge of God, but I knew he was up there. I knew he was somewhere, and I told him that day in that hole. I said, God, help me. That's all I knew to say was help me. And I went ahead and I saw the DHO, and when you wait to see the disciplinary hearing officer, what time in the hole don't count. So he ends up giving me 30 days. I had 38 days in the hole. That's not a lot. It was, it's enough, but it wasn't a lot. And I get out, and they have meetings at Lompoc. They had a help. And I get a little choked up when I think about John and Patrick and George. They would come in. They'd take time out of their program to come in. And I look back now, and they got, I don't mean to sound hard, but they got cops out there, for a better word, I want to use another word, I'm not. They got cops out there messing with them, coming through the gate. You know, like, why you want to do this? You know, they have to jump through hoops just to get in here to see us. But these guys come in and they share. And they give us a look at what it can be like. You know, they don't come in there to brag. They just come in there and they look us in the eye and they say, hey, you know what? You guys don't have to do this the rest of your lives. Sets a man right there knows all about it. Roger, he understands what H&I is about. And I understand H&I ain't for everybody. But it was what I needed. And we got a friend, Tim W. He calls it the golden age of recovery. Back then when we were really doing it. George told me this morning, he said he used to blow him away because we'd hang together in there. And a lot of politics in the States. A lot of places you're not supposed to stand, a lot of people you're not supposed to talk to because you got a certain color. We didn't ride like that. We were all about staying clean and trying to get on down the road, trying to get something better. And it was H&I. They did it with the NA bunch. And to us, there was no difference between AA and NA, not to us in there. We just all wanted to do something different than what we were doing. And I started hitting meetings in 1999. August, my sponsor, Dave Boyd, I thought he was going to be here today. He was in there with me. He's an old dope fiend bank robber. And we were sitting there, and we were trying to decide my sobriety date. And we had a calendar. And he said, well, you went in the hole here, and I lost all those days. I didn't know what my sobriety date was. So Dave takes his finger and he goes, that cool? I said, that's cool. So we picked August 13th. That's how I got my sobriety date. It might have been August 11th. It might have been August 15th or 16th. But that's what we came up with. And I started going to meetings. And in 2001, I was doing time for the Fed case, the drug case. In 2001, San Bernardino County came and got me. And I always knew this was coming. And it was the state case. You know, my sponsor tells me I have to share about this. I don't like to talk about all that. I like to think of it as it's behind me. But I know it's part of what got me here today. So I sat 2 years in a very fine spot with great accommodations called West Valley Jail in Rancho Cucamonga, California. And it was a test. It was a test. There was no meetings. I run into maybe, in 2 years, I run into maybe five guys that were interested in hearing what I had to say about recovery. And I came back. I got my state time and part of my agreement, plea agreement. It makes it sound like everybody's on the same page. It's not, though. It's what it is. And it's 14 years. 14 years for taking that man's life. Who, you know, I'm not God. I played God that day. What I've lost most sleep over concerning that incident is I've had, besides Misty, my oldest daughter, I've got three other kids. And while I was locked up, I lost my mom and dad. Mama knew I was sober. She knew I was sober. And bless Mama's heart. She told me on the phone one day, she said, I don't worry about you anymore, son. I know where you're at. That's crazy. That's, you know, there was something in her that was catching a little peace because she knew I was locked down every night. And they sure didn't deserve what I'd give them. They were good people. But I got my time, and now I'm back at Lompoc and back to meetings. And it was amazing. It was amazing. We had laughs. I shared before that concrete and bars don't lock you up. You're not locked up just because you're behind a steel wall. What locks you up is up here. And man, I got free. I was free. Sure, I couldn't go to theater. I couldn't go to the movie. I couldn't go do this. I couldn't go do that. I still couldn't be with my family every day. But I was free. I didn't have that obsession. I didn't live like this anymore, looking over my shoulder. I was immediately, I'm not going to say immediately, I put too much on that. It took a little bit of time, but I've starting to live 10, 15, maybe 20 years younger at times. Because all the drama, all the stupid was behind me. It wasn't behind me because I had amends. But the recovery there at Lompoc was awesome. And it's because of H&I. And the fellas that come in, and like I said, took their time. I had one cat hang with me. Well, a lot of guys hung with me all the years, but I had one guy hang with me, brought his family in to visit me when I got to state prison. And I always tell people about him. I said, if you were sitting around him and he was part of the conversation, you'd think, well, you've met him in prison. What was he locked up for? But a little bit about my family. They share, when they share about their daddy being locked up, they always, you know, they always say about, well, this guy hurt my sister and he took care of business. Yeah, okay, yada, 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 okay, whatever, past that. But I don't know why, they wear it like some weird, maybe badge of honor. Maybe that's the best way for them to rationalize a lot of the pain away that I caused by being gone. You know, they never talk about the first half of that because I was putting methamphetamine in a FedEx pack and sending it to California. That part's never, you know, we don't talk about that. I don't understand it. I told Christy, she lives in Knoxville. She's got a great life. I got two kids that have great lives. And I got two that just, they're just not survivors. And I told Christy, I said, you know, I was the man of the house. I was supposed to be part of the big decisions. We're going to go here, we're going to go there. And I dropped the ball because of my drinking and using. I made such bad decisions, and it just really screwed that family up. One time I went 22 months without hearing from my youngest daughter, Raylan. Almost 2 full years. I didn't hear letters, and I never quit writing. And I get a letter, and it's about, I don't know, 13, 14 months before I'm supposed to be released. And she writes me a letter, and she says, Dad, you're coming here when you get out. Whoa. I hadn't checked yet. You know, is this her? You're coming here. That's down there in La Quinta. She said, I won't hear anything else, but you're coming here. And, you know, for a guy that's just been down for the biggest part of 2 decades to get a letter, because, you know, we're looking at halfway houses down Crack Alley. I mean, it's just, that's pretty amazing. That was a God shot, to say the least. And she says, Dad, you're coming here. And so I had a spot when I got out. And where they had me to house those last few years, there was no program. There was no, I was a mentor in an RDAP drug program. It was a freaking joke. But that little title, I got to talk to recovery to somebody every day. And I shared my experience, strength, and hope whenever I got the chance. Back to my daughter, Raylan. Her brother's 2 years older than her. He's a mess. He's in some trouble right now. My oldest daughter, Misty, I don't know if it was the head injury that guy caused her that night. I think it was the head injury and some of the stuff she was doing. She's a mess. They're probably never going to come back from where they're at right now. They're medicated. My ex-wife, she's finally stepped up. She sort of takes care of both of them. But there's something inside me that wants to set them down. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm worth the pass they've given me for leaving over 18 years. I know I'm supposed to accept it, but I have trouble with it. They do so much for me. I've just been so blessed, because most guys that do that kind of time, they literally get out and they have to start over. They're making it pretty easy. When it gets hard, it's usually because of my thinking is what makes it hard, and I understand that. my buddy Patrick was at the gate. I walked out of there with prison shorts on that were like six sizes too big, T-shirts hanging down to here. And it was such a good feeling. At the hotel, he gave me a handful of clothes. I went in the bathroom and I threw them away. And I'm swerving down. I'm never going to wear a 3X T-shirt again. I'm never going to wear size 4X shorts. I'm just not going to do it. I was lucky enough for some fellas to cover my expenses on a retreat a couple weeks ago. And my buddy Dave Boyd was there, and I'm going for a jog. He says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "You know," he said, "Well, what do you?" I said, "Well, one thing I don't do is I don't jog in circles anymore. I've run so many times in circles that I like to just go, and I watch my watch, and I go so far in one direction for so many minutes, and then I come back." And I went jogging twice that weekend. I got lost both times. That was exciting. And the recovery part, the obsession's been gone. I work what I think is a good program. I catch as many meetings as I do a week. I can a week. I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall. There's a big trip planned in November. My daughters got together, and it's supposed to be a family reunion type thing. It's going to happen in Missouri. And I can't believe it. The bad thing about that is my PO ain't signed off on it. And she told me that, text me when you leave town, text me when you get back. But if anything happens, you're on your own. And I was telling my sister yesterday on the phone, I said, you know, what could possibly happen to Richard Myrick? What could possibly go wrong with me there? But you know what? I shouldn't have to live like that anymore, because all the madness and the insanity that I used to wreak doesn't happen anymore. Funny joke. This is not a joke. It turned out sort of funny. I got insurance now, and I'm not paying for it. So don't. It's not like I got this job and I'm buying my insurance. I'm riding my insurance ticket now off the backs of taxpayers. I understand that, but I got insurance now, and I had to have a tooth pulled. And when I first shared this, I only shared this once. There's a woe is me part of this share. A practical part of this share, and then it turns funny. The woe is me is I had to have the tooth pulled, and they didn't want to, but my insurance didn't cover what they wanted to do to it, so it's extractions are free and fillings are free. That's the insurance I got. So when they pulled it out, big chunk of bone, and I mean, it's just all a mess. Well, in my daughter's vehicle, I've got what they call an Intoxilock. Anybody know what? Familiar with an Intoxilock? Had DWIs? Blow in a machine, get the thing running. Oh, it's all right. Well, I step out of the dentist office, and they give you this long list of stuff to do. You know, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you know, take it easy, soft foods, salt water. Well, I go out there, and I blow in this, and this whole side of my face is numb, and I blow in this machine, and I can't break the shield. I blow hard. Next thing you know, apparently, when the oral surgeon did the extraction, he perforated one of the sinus cavities. And my whole face is numb, but all of a sudden, this whole eye shuts. And I literally blew my whole sinus cavity. And my whole side of my just boom, like that, and I look in the mirror and I'm and I run back in the dentist office and I go and they go, "What did you do?" Because there's no reaction, it's just and then the funny part is they, I have to call my daughter, she has to take off work, come over, and I'm sitting there in the waiting room waiting on my daughter to get there, and this guy comes out, and I know him, his name's Randall, and he's complaining about, and I said, Randall, what are you doing? And he goes, well, what are you doing here? I said, what happened to you? And he says, you know what they effing asked me in there? And I said, what's that, man? He said, they asked me if I was going to blow in a breathalyzer. And I said, well, that's my fault. And the dentist come out and said, that's going to be added to our list of don'ts. Don't blow in a breathalyzer. There's insanity in that. There's practicality in that. And there's a blessing in that because, you know, I've got insurance. I guess it's called Obamacare. I don't want to live on that forever. I hope you know that. I'm better than that. I'm not saying I'm better than that because I just need that right now. But I'm out. I've got a great support system. Things just get better. I've got a brand new shirt on. Never wore it. I've tried it on. Naturally, I tried it on. But there's a story behind this shirt. Gal in my home group, really nice gal, man. She's an awesome gal. She's 78 years old, almost 80. Walk and talk a miracle. And she asked me one day, she says, can you wear extra large shirts? I said, honey, I can wear anything if I have to. And she shows up with three really nice shirts. And that may not sound big, but at this point in my life, to me, that's big. That's big. A guy came to me. I guess I'd known him. We did some work for him. Me and my son-in-law did a little work for him in his front yard. And our relationship started. He walked up and he says, I hear you're a friend of Bill W. down at the park. I said, well, as a matter of fact, I am. And that started our friendship. And about 3 or 4 months ago, he pulls me up at the end of the meeting. He says, hey, man, you be my sponsor. And what do you mean? What? I couldn't believe what he asked. He said, will you be my sponsor? And I said, man, I said, I'm just out. I got nothing. He's a homeowner. He's got the nice job. He's got the toys. He's got all that. He said, man, you got what I want. And he'd been in and out of the program a couple of times. We're working on an amends list. He's never burnt anybody. He's never went and got a $40, $50 bag and not paid for it. He's never not paid his rent. He's never not paid his utility bills. He doesn't not paid a phone. We're working on this amends list, but he said I got what he wants. My home group. I was telling George this morning on the way up here. At any given day, there's maybe 150 years of sobriety in this group, and they all got problems. Well, they got quality problems. What I consider quality problems. And I was sitting there listening one day to them, and they were like, meh, 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 meh. Snowbirds are coming, meh, 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 meh. Forget the fact how much money the snowbirds bring in every year. You know, and I'm sitting around, I said, you know what? I finally shared. I said, because my sponsor tells me I'm supposed to share. I said, you know what? I'm listening to you guys this morning. Don't get me wrong. I'm proud to be here, and I'm proud that you guys decided to love me and accept me. I said, but you know what? I literally do not have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Literally. I said, but right now in this meeting, I honestly think I'm the richest man here. And I wasn't trying to check anybody. I wasn't trying to belittle anybody. I wouldn't have tried to say, I got this, you don't kind of thing. It was just, that's what I felt. And that's what I shared. And man, you thought I was running for president at the end of that meeting. People handshaking and this and that. But you know, that's where I'm at. I got people inviting me into their home. The meeting before the group, before this thing here, was about open-mindedness, willingness, and somebody mentioned crack houses. And you know, I'd walk in a crack house and just slip right in, just fit right in, just like we all were raised up together, and leave crack house and meet with people that you were doing something. They were definitely a better class of people than what I just left. And I slip in right with them too. And that boy, I sure was full of myself. I don't know if I was full of myself. I never have believed in the saying a person can't be honest with himself. Maybe, I don't know, but I knew better. I knew better. And it took doing what I had to do, going through what I had to go through, seeing what I saw and doing what I did to get where I'm at right now. And man, I look back and I the insanity, the near misses, thought I got over that damn 8 and 9. You think you got over, you think you pulled it off, and then all of a sudden you get clean and sober and you run into 8 and 9. And you realize, man, I didn't get over on anybody. I'm the one feeling like shit now about it. A little bit about amends. I realize now God's put everything in my life just as I needed it. He put my prison, he put my recovery, he put this, he put that. And on the amends things, I made them to my family. They all say they accept it. I've got so many money amends that it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Back rent, utility bills, 20 here, 20 there. I was kind of dope fiend to help, you know, I'd steal your wallet and help you look for it, you know. And he's putting them to me, you know. I roll up Ironwood State Prison out there at the state line, and this guy comes up and they call him Trona. I said, Trona, California? He says, yeah. And I just come out, I'm ready, I'm all about the program, and they got meetings there, and I said, who, what, what? He says, this is such nephew, and I'm somebody I burnt. Well, shit, what do you do now, Rich? Supposed to make amends. And the way I made amends is he called his uncle. The uncle says, yeah, I barely remember the guy. Something about a toolbox. Yeah, I bought the guy $30 worth of canteen. Made the amends. It felt good. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal, but it felt good to me. I just hope this trip back to Missouri, Thanksgiving. Boy, I got some people back there. I don't know what God's going to put on my plate there. One thing's for sure, he's not going to put nothing on there I can't handle. I heard not long ago that about the third step, and this isn't me, I haven't, but if you work a perfect third step, if you work a perfect third step for what it says, you've relinquished the right to panic. You can't freak out. You can't lull. Because you know what the third step says. You know, you've given it, it's God. Hey, you're driving, I'm not. Today, I like to think I'm working on the third step. I've worked all my steps. I've got, you are witnessing, you're listening to a guy right now that's got the perfect ability to freak out if I need to. I can just go, boy, this, it can go. I went through the ceiling over this trip. I thought I had everything figured out, and all of a sudden it didn't work out, and I'm, but you know what? It's a God thing. And everything you see is good and right and positive about me is God. He's first. I used to tell, I don't know if those guys remember it, they used to come in on the H&I meetings. And I'm going to say to you guys too, I want to thank God for putting it upon your hearts to be a part of this. Because we all know where our best thinking's got us. Somebody told me if you have a good idea, at the least call your sponsor, talk to somebody. But I'm clean and sober today by the grace of God. H&I, you know what? If you've never tried it, I'm not saying it's for everybody, but you know what? If you're going to walk a long life of recovery, you owe at least to look into it and try it once. It may not be your glitch, but you know, but it's really, there's guys in there, they're waiting. And they're running a lot of people in there, they're just in there for the coffee and the donuts. So what? Yeah, you're not keeping them sober, you're keeping yourself sober. And thank you for having me. I could go here and I could go there, but for today, I think I've said everything I need to say. Y'all have a good one, you hear?
How about another round of applause for our speaker? We'll be available to receive your thanks after our closing prayer. I'd also like to thank Vicki and Nancy who read. And do we have someone scheduled to read the vision for you, Victoria? Okay. How about Patrick from Lompoc? It's fine. You can clap for him. It's all right. Yeah. Well, I try to find this vision for you. We'll find it, Patrick. Are you getting your glasses? There you go. Thank you. You got it.
Patrick Guthrie, alcoholic.
Hi, Patrick.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand Him. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. G- Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Okay. And now, Billy. Billy, since you're here, can you lead us out in the Lord's Prayer?
Sort of look.